Chapter 23. The chamber they stood in was broad and open, with enormous statues acting as pillars, each depicting a god with what appeared to be the head of a cobra, with its enormous hood spread wide as if to strike.
"Who's that supposed to be?" Kit asked, still shivering as they checked their gear. "Is that Anubis?"
"No. Anubis had a jackal's head," the red panda said, pulling sodden equipment from his pockets. "Could be Geb. He was sometimes depicted with a snake head. Not usually a cobra, though."
"I thought you knew all about this stuff," Kit said, surprised.
He shrugged. "I know a little," he said modestly. "But this pyramid is from a vastly different era. The pantheon of Egypt evolved a great deal over thousands of years, even major players like Anubis. When this was built, he was the god of the underworld and the king of the dead. Then he was supplanted by the Osiris myths and relegated to a relatively minor function of the judging of the dead. He mostly showed the newly dead into an audience with Osiris."
"Oh, Anubis, ouch," Kit smiled.
"This terrible fellow is quite unknown to me. Could be an early variation of a god we know, or a minor deity who faded from mythology." He looked around in amazement. "Just think about where we are," he said quietly. "It's really quite incredible."
"You love your job, don't you?" Kit said, shaking her head a little.
"I really do," he said with a smile.
"I fear that we have little time for wonder," Falcone said, rising to his feet. "How are we?"
The red panda took inventory of the small pile of gear that he was leaving behind. "Well, we used everything we had with any kind of concussive charge, blowing the hole in the wall. We used all of our gas grenades on the jackals, of course. And the flashlights are finished. I admit I wasn't really expecting to take a bath with my equipment. Some of it is a little worse for wear."
"Isn't that the pouch you carry those breadcrumbs of yours in?" the squirrel asked.
"Ah," he said, "you noticed that. Yes, they're more water-resistant than give them a good solid dunking." She tried not to look worried.
"Will we be able to find our way out again with just the ones you've already dropped? I guess it depends how much further we go, right?"
He looked uncomfortable. "Well, yes," he said. "Also that."
"The detector was also ruined, wasn't it?" Falcone asked.
"Well, yes," the red panda replied sheepishly.
Kit Baxter felt frightened for the first time in longer than she could remember.
"Oh, boy,"
was all that she said. Both men tried to think of something comforting to say that she wouldn't immediately see through and came up empty. They stood in silence for a moment.
"I'm all right," she said at last.
The light from the orb flickered and faded slightly.
"Except stop doing that," Kit said seriously.
"Is maintaining that light taxing, Max?" the red panda asked.
"It shouldn't be," the stranger said a little frustrated, "but it is. I don't quite know how to express it. I keep emptying the tank before it gets full. Makes it difficult to maintain even the simplest of energy fields."
"Well, let's do something about that," he said, reaching for a torch on one of the pillars.
"Red Panda, wait!"
the flying squirrel said. He froze obligingly.
"Let's just say you were an ancient Egyptian death trap designer," she said, "and you're wondering what to put in after your water pit trap. Anyone who somehow lived would be wet, and they'd be cold, and they'd have no light."
He paused. "You think the torch is a trap?"
"I think the torch is a trap," she agreed.
He looked at it quickly. "I think the torch is a torch," he said, "but it could be pressure-sensitive, I suppose."
"Just don't touch it, okay?" she asked. "I really don't want this room to fill up with snakes or something."
He looked around and saw several more torches on pillars further away from the water trap. "Are they all traps?" he asked. "Can I grab a pair from over there?"
"Yes, fine," she agreed, though she held her breath while he did so.
He held the torches in his hands and looked at her. He waited a moment, listening, and then smiled.
"Nothing."
A moment later, Max had lit the torches, extinguished his magic orb, and they were prepared for the next leg of their journey. As they turned toward the winding staircase that led out of the chamber, the red panda looked back at the first torch, a bit wistfully.
"Well, now I'll never know," he said.
"Tell you what," she said. "If we live, I'll let you spring the trap on the way back out."
He beamed.
"That's tough but fair," he said.
"We must make haste," the stranger said. "As we near the Eye of Anubis, I can feel its power grow. I no longer need to search for it. It calls to me."
Well, that's good, she said brightly.
Good and bad. Falcone was grave. If it calls to me, then Thatcher and Pavley will be able to sense it as well, even if they are less in tune with the frequencies involved. They may have divided their forces at the entrance. It is very possible that all four paths lead to the eye eventually. They may, in fact, be ahead of us.
Fenwick!
The cry came from behind them and rang over the stone walls like thunder. They turned back and saw two men carrying lights standing in the chamber they had just left. The speaker was unmistakably El Nimir.
Oh, not this hockey puck again, Kit sighed.
Now, the Red Panda said. Perhaps he's learned his lesson. El Nimir quickly pulled a revolver from his coat and fired two shots in their direction. They were rushed and fell to no effect, but his intent was clear. Or not, the Red Panda shrugged.
3, 2, 1,
Kit said as the stone door closed, sealing the men in the water trap.
I wonder if there's any water left in that thing, she asked.
An instant later they could clearly hear the terrified screaming, muffled though it was by tons of stone.
Yep, she said. I guess there was.
They turned to the stairs once again and climbed into the darkness above.